land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, those of you who understand what a shofar is, recognize that was the blowing of a shofar. This is the week of Teruah. I understand that Teruah is just the first day of the seventh month of Yahweh's calendar. But for us, Teruah is every day. In fact, when Leah, my wife, and I celebrated Teruah, which we did on Tuesday evening and Wednesday, we actually celebrated as our birthday. It was in 2001 during Teruah that Yahweh introduced himself and asked us to embark upon this this mission. And so the nice thing about this is that I am just 22 years old, just celebrated my 22nd birthday. Makes me feel good about that. But it is our life.
Congratulations.
This is what we have done. 8, 10, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for 21 years. So it is Teruah week that we are celebrating. There are some other items in the news that I want to share with you before we embark on what is a rather extraordinary program tonight. I'm going to share two things with you tonight that are have never been considered. These are profound insights that have monumental impact when understood. And until this Teruah, when I began to translate them, no one had considered the possibility that these things could be true. And no one has for the past 2,500 years. So this will be a rather extraordinary program. Our two co-hosts this evening are at a little bit of a disadvantage in the sense that while both received a copy of the first chapter that we're going to share earlier this afternoon, it wasn't until 2 minutes ago that they received the second, which I think is far more profound. Now, before we get into that program, there are some items in the news that I want to cover. Some now 13 years ago, 12 years ago, I did a whole series of programs on the consequence of the United States gerrymandering the outcome of a revolution in Ukraine to undermine the popularly elected government, which was pro-Russian, such that the West and America could draw Ukraine into NATO and justify NATO's existence and to create a climate of war. And I spoke about this going back into the Obama administration when he orchestrated the CIA to arm neo-Nazi factions in the Ukraine and to inspire a revolution that turned out to pit pro-European forces against the pro-Russian forces. And at the time, what I said was that this is a disastrous move. First of all, we claim to be pro-democracy, and yet we have undermined the democracy of the Ukraine through this revolution. Second, the Ukraine government and people are the least deserving, perhaps, in the world. That and I went through the history of bankrolling them from both the IMF bankrolling them and also the Russians bankrolling them, where the Ukrainians never paid off their debt.
Russians.
And they were, there's so much graft in the Ukrainian government that it is amongst the most notorious countries in the world, the most notorious in Europe for being, well, despicable as it relates to people skimming money. And there is a very large anti-Semitic faction. In fact, the Ukraine was more anti-Semitic than Nazi Germany. They have been anti-Semites far longer than Nazi Germany. They have abused Jews for a far longer period of time than have Germans. And the effects of the Holocaust and pogroms in Ukraine were more vicious than they were in Nazi Germany. And yet the United States, around 2012, 10 years ago, decided that we would create a war footing in the Ukraine to use them as a proxy to fight against the Russians, just as we had used the Taliban as a proxy to fight against the Russians. We have become very adept at using other people to fight our wars, like we used the Kurds to go after Al-Qaeda and then against Assad in Syria. We arm others to fight our battles, just as we are now spending tens of billions of dollars to arm the Ukrainians to bludgeon the Russians. What I said at the as this began to transpire is that what we're looking at is the Cuban Missile Crisis, but with dunderheads at the helm. When the Russians responded to us putting nuclear missiles in Turkey along their borders by putting nuclear missiles in Cuba near our border, the sensible thing to do was to remove the missiles from both countries, which is what the world did. This time, when Russia objected to weaponizing Ukraine and to positioning it as part of a military alliance against Russia, the United States taunted the Russians. And rather than withdraw our desire to militarize it and make it part of NATO, we exacerbated the problem, and Russia did what it had to do under these circumstances, which is to invade. And then we did the most stupid thing in the history of stupidity. We provided billions and billions and billions of dollars of our most sophisticated weapons to the Ukrainians so that they could go kill Russians, and so Russia could not execute its invasion of Ukraine in a sensible way. Which is to go in to the metropolitan areas with military personnel. Instead, because we provided with anti-tank and anti-aircraft weapons, the only thing you could do is bombard them from afar, which is called the indiscriminate killing of civilians. Yeah. And in the process, we have killed many, many, many Russians with our weapons. And what I said is that's so stupid because Russia has the largest nuclear arsenal in the world. And with a guy like Putin, who is not your your most jovial, easygoing pussycat, with a fellow like Putin at the helm, if you push him into a corner where there's no way out, he is going to use nuclear weapons.
Yes.
Yep. And so both at a speech at the United Nations with his foreign minister and Putin himself, said, you continue to act like you are and continue to supply these weapons to Ukraine, we're going to use nuclear weapons. So it gives me no joy to tell you that everything I've said over the past decade has turned out to be precisely accurate and that the world is in a horrible situation. And it actually is worse than that because in our infinite wisdom, rather than accept responsibility for the war in Ukraine, the United States decided to punish the Russians and blame the Russians and sanction them. And so we began a disinformation campaign, a propaganda campaign, to make it all Putin's fault, and then decided to sanction him, where we steal the yachts and houses of oligarchs as if an oligarch is a bad thing. And then we sanctioned them. Well, by sanctioning them, we have come very close to starving the world because Russia was one of the largest exporters of wheat and also the largest exporter of fertilizer. We sent food prices soaring, and we emptied shelves of food. And then we sent energy prices soaring because Russia is one of the world's largest exporters of gas and oil. They are by far the largest exporter of gas and oil to Europe, which is now going through a horrible both inflation and recession. And that, in fact, news came out of Europe now that the contraction of GDP within the European economies is so great that it collectively will be larger than the entire economy of France. You know, across the globe, it says that GDP will be 2.8 trillion lower than it was expected prior to these sanctions, which is a diminishment of expectations equivalent to the size of the entire French economy. I have met the enemy. He is us.
Yeah.
We did this to ourselves. And then we blamed someone else. The EU, of course, has come up with the dunderhead move of all dunderhead moves. It's the problem of being a progressive. If you are a progressive, shame on you. You are an absolute idiot. They've decided that what they're going to do is, since they don't have enough energy, is they're going to punish the people who bring them energy. They're going to install a windfall tax. Oh, it sounds so justified that, well, there was a windfall. Well, there's an increase in profitability short term for the energy companies because they use an accounting principle that they have been mandated, which is last in, first out. That means if oil prices go up, their inventory is evaluated at the price that they're currently paying. If energy goes down, they are screwed, blued, and tattooed because their value of their inventory plummets. And you don't find countries saying, well, we're going to make it up to you when energy prices go down and we'll offset your taxes. But they want to increase the taxes on the very companies that are capable of delivering energy. Oh, and if that were not bad enough, the dunderheads in Europe have decided to price fix energy. They're saying, this is the highest price that energy can be purchased. So if it goes above that, what do you get? Nothing?
Black market.
Oh, my. Well, no, it just, no, I mean, it won't happen.
No.
The Pentagon, meanwhile, is now working to come up with more adroit ways and more overt ways to arm and train Ukrainian troops. This is our war against Russia.
The war going, yes.
And all the while, Russia has now annexed the Russian-speaking areas. We've said we will never recognize them in the United States, and yet they voted overwhelmingly to be part of Germany. I mean, to be part of Russia. It's the idea that if people vote for something, like in Crimea, where 98% of the people decided they want to be part of Russia, not part of the goons that were now running Ukraine, we don't care. We call that undemocratic. When 98% of people vote for their future, when that vote is counter to what we want. Isn't it swell? Mm. So we are headed, by the way, to nuclear war. Going to be the outcome. Oh, by the way, though, the Russian Orthodox Church, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, he looks just like Santa Claus, I must tell you. Santa Claus is real. He's got his white beard. He's got his beautiful robes. You know, he is... Mr. Russian Orthodox Church, he did the same thing. He pulled a Pope Urban. Pope Urban, to get the crusaders, said, you know, if you go fight this crusade, then all of your sins are automatically forgiven. You go directly to heaven. No purgatory, no need for forgiveness. You go directly to heaven if you go fight this crusade. So the Russian Orthodox head priest, high ranking potentate, whatever he calls himself, he said, you go and fight for Russia against the Ukraine, you go directly to heaven. All your sins are forgiven.
This is smart.
Sorry. Not going to happen. All right. So I promised an extraordinary set of revelations. I'm going to begin with the little one, and then we will transition to the big one. This is now found in the fourth chapter of Volume 9 of the Yada Yahweh series. Volume 8 of Yada Yahweh was posted a few weeks ago at yadayah.com. And I do want, since I had nothing to do with the creation of the site, I want to just tell you that David and Jackie, who have been the two lead people creating it, particularly David, it is spectacular. It works beautifully on tablets. It works beautifully on smartphones. It works beautifully on your computer. It is really an extraordinary site that presents all of the books of the Yada Yahweh series in their entirety. And has marvelous search and study tools that are part of it, and some extraordinary community experiences, including the social media outreach. And Ms. Social Media, we are in Belgium today, isn't that correct?
Yes. Yes, today.
Okay,
in Belgium.
That was an affirmative yes there. We are marketing in Belgium today. So if you're listening, welcome to this program. I would like to say one thing about Teruah as we begin this review. Teruah is the first day of the seventh month of Yahweh's calendar. And yet religious Jews, even secular Jews, will celebrate it as the Jewish New Year's in the beginning of the High Holy Days. To claim to be Torah observant and to celebrate the Babylonian Rosh Hashanah is to be a complete and utter hypocrite. So I just want to explain that from Yahweh's point of view in his Torah, there is no Babylonian New Year. There is no Rosh Hashanah made up entirely by rabbis. Yahweh, who just happens to be God, has seven Moed Mikre, restoring eternal witnesses that are invitations for us to meet. And They include Pesach, which the rabbis completely screw up in terms of the menu, presenting essentially what Cain had rejected when he approached Yahweh. They completely ignore the single most important day of the year, which is matzah. There is no celebration of matzah at all. It's now just a missing ingredient in the Pesach diet. They ignore Bukurim, which means firstborn children. They ignore Shabuah, which means the promise of seven, when we are enriched and empowered and enlightened as the adopted and immortal perfected children of the covenant. Teruah they have replaced with Rosh Hashanah. Kippurim they have turned into a day of affliction as opposed to the day of reconciliations, which is what the word means. And Sukkah is not so popular anymore amongst religious Jews. It speaks of camping out with Yahweh. All right. In the concluding chapter of Daniel, we're told that something marvelous happens in the midst of something equally horrific. The last days will be a tumultuous time. And so before we attempt an explanation, even before we have been afforded all of the details which will be forthcoming as we turn to our comprehensive review of Daniel, which will be in programs future, I want to share with you what is revealed in Daniel 12. The final chapter. It has a number of things, particularly the timeline, that heretofore I don't think anyone has been able to explain. And we do that in this review. We tell you exactly when the time of troubles begins. We tell you what is the great abomination. We reveal exactly when it ends. And we explain why there's a 45-day difference in the two timelines. It is here in Daniel 12 that we discover that Wahashakal, one or two with insight, along with those who are discerning with the capacity to understand, will learn based upon what will be taught. Then Zahar. They will become prominent, obtaining a relatively high status, being respected among heavenly beings, shining brightly while enlightening. This is because they will be ha-zohar, like light, brilliant, intense, glowing, while teaching and admonishing, enlightening and warning. They will be fulfilling the promise of Teruah in anticipation of the Day of Reconciliations on Kippurim. The scope and nature of these informative heralds, and likely also those who will benefit from them and join them, will be ha-rakah, a big deal, as rock solid and as it is expansive. So enormously important that its merits are comparable to the entirety of the universe. So that's a big deal. As a result, Wa Sadak Ha Rab, the numerous and valued individuals who are right will be vindicated, becoming Kaha Kokab, like stars, heavenly and powerful, brilliant luminaries, La Olam Wa Ad, forevermore, as restored and eternal witnesses. That's quite a promise.
Yes,
but
sir.
Also one which comes with a sobering reminder. A great deal is at stake, and it is important that we do our part to capitalize upon this opportunity. So with the fate of humankind and with your very soul, have you not reconciled it with Yahweh hanging in the balance, here is the concluding chapter of Daniel for your consideration. And so at this time, Michael, one who indeed is right about God, who is correct about the Almighty, who validates these connections with God. It is from a compound of my, who, he, ka, and ken, verifying these associations, these connections and comparisons to be correct and truthful, even certain regarding El, Almighty God, who is representing the king, Tsar, the one serving the anointed leader by focusing on his family and their relationship as an authorized and designated individual, will have an important role nourishing the growth and promoting Hagadol, your family's children, taking a stand, present and accountable. Then there will be a time of trouble beyond which has never existed from a Gentile nation prior to this time. And during this period, your people will be saved, everyone rescued from harm's way and delivered, who is found written in the book. That is just the first statement of Daniel 21.
Wow.
All right.
Got my attention.
And this is all we're going to do tonight in this chapter. And a lot of people, I'm sure, would say, boy, I really want to know what it is, because this is the timeline that unravels the mystery of our future. We're only going to deal with this one verse. There are 13 references in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms to Michael. 13 of them. 10 of which address ordinary individuals from long ago. Therefore, they are not this Michael. The three depictions which apply to this particular individual are found only in Daniel, with the other two appearing in the 10th chapter. Therefore, what we know of him, his identity and purpose, is explained here and nowhere else. The most overriding clue to the nature of this individual is the recognition that Michael appears to be a descriptive title rather than a name each of the three times that it is used. It is a compound of several Hebrew words, beginning with my, which is an interrogatory, asking us if we know who is being addressed. Before I share what follows in this chapter, I will tell you that, and we're going to talk about this a bit more when we analyze the section of the 8th chapter of Daniel. Daniel is unique among the prophets, and I was initially sort of taken back by it. He spends an inordinate amount of time telling us who is talking to him and where he is at the time, and then pleading with those who are talking to him to help him understand. The fact is, he never does understand. The fact is, he's told, you're not going to understand. This isn't for you to understand. He's told that there will be no understanding of this until it is revealed as we approach the last days. But I kept on wondering, why is he so fixated on trying to present who's talking to him, like Michael here? What's the reason for that? Particularly if he's asking them for understanding and they never provide him with it. Well, come to find out, the identity of Michael and later Gabriel, Michael and Gabriel, is actually more important than knowing who the lowly and little horn, the Torahless one, the one that Christians think is the Antichrist, that knowing the nature of the final beast that's going to torment the world is less important than knowing who these fellows are. Because these fellows are bringing Yahweh's testimony to his people at a time that it is desperately needed. So there's a whole lot of focus on who it is that is sharing the truth. And by the way, I don't think that Daniel, in fact, I'm fairly certain that Daniel didn't know either of them, didn't recognize either of them. He wasn't supposed to. You are. All right, so the first thing we do is we recognize that Michael is a compound word. Mm-hmm. The first is clearly my. And it's an interrogatory in Hebrew. It asks us to question who. We are being asked to figure out who this is. This is followed by a contraction of either ki, ka, or ken. Probably and or ken. If it's ki, ky, then it means indeed, speaking of someone who is certain, sure, and truthful, and who is emphatic, but also reasonable. If ka, then this individual has a propensity to make the kind of connections, comparisons, and associations which are needed to understand. And if ken, then his claims about Yahweh are verifiable and correct, truthful, and certain. Those are the palette of choices that are before you. El, of course, means Almighty God. So Michael concludes with Yahweh's title. Therefore, Michael asks those seeking to understand who, indeed, is certain, sure, and truthful, emphatic and reasonable about God, consistently making the kind of comparisons and associations needed to verify that he is truthful and correct, even certain about God. Or more succinctly, Michael, who indeed at this time is right about God. As we would expect from such an individual, especially as we approach Dode's return to defend and lead his people, Michael is Sar. We're told that he is representing the king. He is Sar, serving the anointed leader by focusing on his family and their relationship with God. As such, he is Sar, clearly designated, overtly authorized, and resolutely empowered relative to the king. And who is the king?
Dode.
Few things are more important than recognizing that Dode is the Son of God. He is our shepherd.
Yes.
He is the King of Kings. He is the returning Messiah. If you are Jewish and you are listening to this program, understand that the Son of God is Dode David. He is the person that Yah says, he is my son, I am his father. He is the person that God said, I have anointed him. He is my anointed Messiah. He is the shepherd, and he is the returning king, which makes him the King of Kings, as he will reign over the universe forever. If you are a Jew and you think that you're awaiting an unknown Messiah, then you have been misled. You have a returning Messiah, the greatest man who ever lived, Dode David. So as we would expect, this individual, Michael, is authorized to speak of Doe's return. This realization not only nullifies the aspirations of progressives, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, it presents the ultimate Yahud calling his people home. This is the essential truth that is documented throughout Yada Yahweh, and in particular in the Coming Home volumes. It is anathema to progressives because they want no Jewish identity whatsoever with Yisrael. And yet, Dote was not only the king of Yisrael 3,000 years ago, but he is returning. Oops. It is devastating to Christianity because not only does Christianity claim that Michael is an archangel, and they said that every promise made to Dode was transferred to their Jesus, and that Dode is deader than dead, according to Paul, buried and gone, and it's their Christ that is returning, it's devastating to Christianity. And it is devastating to Islam because Michael is to be trusted. And he has written a book called Prophet of Doom, which destroys the credibility of Islam. Okay, next we're told that Michael will ha-gadol play an important role in nourishing the growth of while promoting al ben Amata, your family's children. He's speaking to Daniel. And he says, your family's children, which tells you that this individual is not Jewish. It's not his family, it's your family. Well, that's a heck of a clue, isn't it? This means that he will gadol intensely and vociferously distinguish himself through amplification to empower the prophet's people, a.k.a. Jews. Further, not only will Michael Ahmad be appointed and supported while taking a stand on behalf of the chosen people, he will begin immediately prior to Eth Sarah, the time of trouble. And so that there is no mistaking the timing as our own, we were told that the resulting Sarah, confinement and adversity, will be as a result of Goyim and their nations becoming overtly hostile towards Jews and Israel, more so than any other time in history. Worse than that inflicted by Assyria, Babylon, Greece, Rome, the church, Muslims, or the Nazis. If that were not enough to correctly identify Michael and place him, Baha'et-Ha'i, in this specific period, his contribution to God's family will be to matzah, bind, and then share, kathab, what is written, Baha Shefer, in the book, such that Yehudim are malat, rescued from harm's way, and delivered unto Yahweh. Recognizing that this realization regarding Michael destroys the credibility of Judaism, because he is right about God, Christianity and Islam, both for the same reason, let's be thorough in our analysis. When Michael is initially introduced, it is in Daniel 10:3. That's the first time that this Michael is spoken of. And there we're told that he is Ichad HaSar HaRishon. Ichad means that Michael is either a certain one of, or he is the one and only in this stated role. He is either the first or the foremost on this particular occasion. As the Hasar, he is the leading representative of the king, at least pursuant to this particular mission on Dode's behalf. As a Sar, he is authorized, empowered, and capable, so he will prevail even when challenged. Ha Rishon reveals that he is primary and foremost, and thus the principal person serving in this capacity. He is likely the first to do so. Rishon reveals that he would have begun conveying this particular message before anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, Makael is the first and foremost, one of the leading representatives of the king, a certain individual who was among the first authorized and empowered to serve in this capacity, which is to explain what we are reading here in Daniel.
Wow.
This is further affirmed in Daniel 10:14, which is in Makael's voice. It reads, "Now I have come to provide you with understanding of what will happen to your people in the end of days, because the revelation pertains to that time." The second of three references to Makael, who was responsible for explaining Daniel's vision, is found in the 21st and concluding statement of the 10th chapter. There we learn that his role was Nagad, conspicuously reported to us by Ha Rishum, having been inscribed Ba-Kathab in writing in the book MF, which is trustworthy, enduring, and reliable. For those who have been with us for some time, you know how prolific Yahweh has been as it relates to making this mission conspicuous.
Yes.
He has spoken of it hundreds of times,
mm-hmm,
and applied many titles to this particular role. Bashar, herald, Malak, witness, Choder, a sucker or implement from the original rootstock, Nakar, which is an observant and responsive foreigner. Zeroa, which is one who sows the seeds, which help shepherd God's people. And now Makael, and particularly Yada, which we will find manifest again as we move into the 8th chapter of Daniel. Yada means to know and understand. It is the title of these books. It is the pseudonym that was used for the first 10 of 20 years in pursuing this project. Now, this final reference in the 10th chapter also reveals that Makael was and will be Lo Ichad Shazak, uniquely contentious and very intense, even overpowering in pursuit of the restoration of God's people. And once again, in this pronouncement, Makael is a Sar, a leading representative of the king and his family. You know, when you come across aggressively, combatively, mm-hmm, which is how Yahweh does, you read the prophets, God is aggressive, he is confrontational. You read Dode's Mizmors and what Dode had to say, he is aggressive, he is confrontational. You read what Moshe said, he's aggressive, he's confrontational. Yahweh likes men and women to be assertive, to be combative. That's what he likes. And Makael is right there among them. He's not going to tell you what you want to hear. He's going to tell you what you need to hear, even if it's unpopular. He's going to defend God's people. even when that means accusing them of being wrong. It is mistakenly assumed that Michael is the name of an archangel, but such nonsense comes from the book of Jude in the New Testament, where there is a mythical dispute between Michael the archangel and the devil over the body of Moses. Let me assure even those who venerate grave sites, the prophet's words matter, while his body was irrelevant.
Yep.
Balak, Dunat, Tsar represent kings. They represent Yahweh. Moreover, there is no record of anyone named Michael having written anything which would Gadol have promoted the growth of Yahweh's family. Not their role. In particular, while Malak have speaking roles, they are seldom vociferous. They do not rely on amplification, nor is it their role to magnify anyone. As we will discover in due time, Gabriel isn't a Malak either. He is instead the greatest men of God. Therefore, Michael is descriptive of an individual who validates and verifies the status of our relationship with the Almighty. He is present and accountable, appointed and supported prior to Yisrael's descent into the time of trouble. So unless someone else arrives on the scene and uses their translations and insights to compose something comparable to the 25 volumes of Yad HaYahweh, within the next few years, you are listening to the results of Michael's service to Yahweh and Yisrael by doing his best to represent Dod as our returning king. But more than this, Michael's role is to explain Daniel's vision so that we understand it before it is too late. That which we have just shared comes out of the closing pages towards the end, two-thirds of the way through, the fourth chapter of Volume 9. That chapter goes on to cover the entirety of the concluding, the 12th chapter of Daniel, where we explain things I don't think heretofore anyone has, in fact, I'm certain no one has ever figured out.
No one.
We will
tell
you the exact date these things start, the exact date they end, why they begin on this date, why they end on that date, and why there are a 40 and 5-day differential between the two, which is exceptional in itself. All right. I promised that this program was going to do two things. One was going to explain that Michael is the final witness, and he is not an archangel, nor is he even an angel, nor is he a Malak. He is just a person devoted to sharing your story. But that's small potatoes compared to knowing that Gabriel isn't an angel either. From the Ketz End of Time chapter, now this is 7 in Volume 9, it begins by sharing that we have been regaled with essential insights into our past, because this volume begins with the 7th chapter of Daniel and covers the entire 7th chapter, 8th. And we are in the midst of the 8th chapter. By the time we reach the 7th chapter, we will make it all the way through, as you know now, the 12th. So we have been given insights that are essential into our past. It tells of the beast that evolved from Babylon to become Persia, that evolved from Persia as the beast evolved and metastasized into Greece, and then evolved into Imperial Rome with all of its viciousness, and ultimately metastasized into the Roman Church. And it speaks of how a horn, a lowly and little one, will emerge from what was the Roman Empire out of the Roman Church, and that this individual will do some extraordinarily bad things in the last days, including the abomination, the great abomination, where he will claim to be God, and that he will nullify the things of God. In the previous chapter of this volume, we do something that heretofore has not been done, which is I explain that if you want to understand who this individual is and what they're doing, you need to compare it to the parallel presentation in Yeshayah Isaiah 14, which is how out of Babylon, Satan, whose name is Hillel ben Shakar, will emerge, and how he will claim that he is God, how he will become the God of religion, and precisely how he will achieve his ambition and what the consequences are. They are the same story, with one explaining the other. So it is a very dark future that we are heading towards, and we have expanded our horizons, being among the first to explore, as I say, these parallel proclamations in Daniel 8 and Yeshayah 14, providing us with a unparalleled understanding regarding the identity and methodology of the final beast. His Babylonian origins and Roman Catholic associations have been explained such that we have met the enemy. And he is the God the religious are worshiping today. Now, this serves to explain the greatest of all anomalies, why Yahweh is appreciated by as few as one in a million, while false gods are venerated by billions. Our mission, therefore, is to press on deeper into the prophecy, celebrating the realization that with additional understanding will come greater recognition and acceptance of Yahweh. No doubt frustrated yet undaunted, Yahweh is ready to expand upon what he has previously shared. But first, God wants us to properly position, or not wants, he wants to properly position the players, presenting the men who will serve him in the end. Now, in this regard, as I mentioned earlier, I was initially perplexed by Daniel's propensity to describe the setting and the witnesses each time he conveyed these somewhat similar, repetitive visions. Additionally, I didn't see the point in him continually expressing his desire to understand what he was repeatedly told was designed to be beyond his grasp. And now that we are well into the process, I've come to realize that while the settings are irrelevant, their names actually speak volumes. While Daniel would never understand any of this, the methodology Yahweh wanted us to use to unravel what has remained a mystery is found within the expressed terminology. What I've also discovered is that the witnesses are far more important to this story than a ram, a goat, horns, and beasts. Moreover, what everyone has assumed are names of archangels are actually titles afforded to men. One as great as they come, and this other, his herald. They're being used to accurately describe these individuals without prematurely disclosing their identity. Yahweh is very serious about this. He did not want what Daniel revealed to be explained and understood by anyone until we were on the cusp of his return. So he did everything he could to provide the information that would be necessary for Michael to figure it out and to share it with God's people in time, while precluding anyone else from understanding it.
It's a good job.
There would have been no reason.
A bunch of them, yeah.
Yeah, to share any of this with Daniel, such that he could ascertain, well, you know, Gabriel must be Dode, and it's Dode that's returning, and there's going to be two witnesses, and there's this one who is going to come in advance of the time of troubles to explain this so that Yehudim are not only prepared, but that many will answer the call and return home to Yahweh. As we progress through the next four statements, and I'm only going to share four statements, four verses, if you will, of in Daniel 8 with you. I think everything that I have shared as a conclusion is going to become evident, with the last being particularly telling. As we begin, we discover that Bina describes our methodology, which is to make the connections necessary to deduce relevant insights and to understand, as I've shared. Daniel has painstakingly portrayed the explanations which are provided by these two individuals, both men. They are especially relevant at this time, and one is exceptional. As we discovered previously, Michael is the final witness. He is not an angel. And what we know about, and what we're about to discover, is that Gabriel, which means God enables and empowers man, is simply the greatest among us. The reason that his name was withheld and replaced by this title is explained throughout the prophecy. It is not for Daniel or anyone until today to understand. And naming him would have given away way too much. The implications of these conclusions are earth-shattering, obliterating the essential claims of Christianity and Islam. You know, Christianity claims that, this all began with the angel Gabriel coming down to Mary and saying, you know, blessed are you among women. You know, you're going to have the virgin birth. Well, of course, none of that was true. And now that we're about to find out that Gabriel isn't an angel, we have a serious Christianity as a serious problem. Of course, Islam, the entire Quran, according to Muhammad, was dictated by Gabriel. That's the only one problem. Gabriel's not an angel. Oh, my. Now, should you say, wait a minute. Oh, come on. How can that possibly be true? Gabriel, I'm sure, is spoken about throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, right?
Nope.
He is spoken of throughout the Quran. That's the worst book ever written. He is spoken about throughout the Christian New Testament, which has absolutely no credibility.
Yes.
But you know that he is spoken of in another Hebrew text. Guess which one that would happen to be.
The one JB exposed, Enoch.
Yeah, Enoch, which is completely fanciful and
ridiculous.
Fallacious. So the implications are indeed earth-shattering. Destroys Christianity, destroys Islam. Now, of course, the Michael not being an angel destroys Mormonism. And so without further ado.
Anybody else you want to kick tonight?
Yeah.
Wow.
And here it is from Yahweh's perspective as reported by Daniel. Well, I, Daniel, my God, is judgmental. Well, I, Daniel, was seeing and considering the revelation. I desired and sought insights and understanding. My now. Then behold, present and standing before me was someone who looked like Agabar, a courageous man of character, an especially capable and empowered individual with human characteristics who was strengthened to prevail and who was authorized, aggressive, and combative. I heard the voice of this man, Washama Kol. Of this man, Adam, providing understanding by making connections associated with Ulai. The place doesn't matter. What matters is what it means. My adventure is enriching. My empowering choice. I began this series of books, 25 now in total, by saying we're going to go on a grand adventure. We were going to explore words and venture through time to the very presence of God. My adventure has been enriching for all of those who have embarked on it with me. He called out to and invited Wakara. He summoned and welcomed Gabriel. This man, Adam, who was a Gabor, called out to and invited Gabriel. God enables and empowers man. The Almighty is exceptionally capable and empowered person. It is a compound of Gabor, a particularly strong and resolute man, a capable and authorized, aggressive and combative individual, a fighter and protector with El, Almighty God. And he said, explain the relationship which leads to understanding this revelation. So he positioned himself right beside me. But when he approached, I was overwhelmed. So I chose to fall on my face. So that you know who the players are here. It's, he heard the voice of the man who was a Gabor. Aggressive, combative, empowered, authorized. He heard this person who looked like a man who was a Gabor. And it's the Gabor, this man, Adam, who spoke, providing understanding by making the connections with adventure has been enriching. He called out and invited, this man called out and invited Gabriel to the scene. And he said to Gabriel, explain the revelations which lead to understanding this revelation. So when he came, when Gabriel arrived, positioning himself right beside me. But when he approached, I was overwhelmed, and so I fell on my face. Then he said to me, you should choose to use your ability to make the necessary connections to understand, learning how to closely examine and carefully consider the evidence while being discerning, child of man. Because indeed, the prophetic revelation is for the end of time. When he was speaking with me, I fell into a deep sleep. Boy, Daniel can't win for losing. I lost awareness of my surroundings and the situation. Wow, flat on my face on the ground. And yet he continued to reach out to me. And he propped me up and cause me to be upright upon my assigned post.
Interesting.
He said,
stand out, boy.
Pay close attention. He said, pay close attention to me. Behold who I am. Yada will make this known so that you will understand. Yada will make this known so that you will understand.
It gives me chills.
Yada,
yeah,
will engage to become familiar with and acknowledge, continuing to comprehend and then explain what you have observed, become aware of, and have revealed. It was written in the Hifl participle, masculine singular, not first person, masculine singular. Therefore, it cannot be Dode saying, I will cause you to understand. Hifl means that you are enabling the object of this to understand. But it was not written in the first person, which means it cannot be I. And since it is Yada, it is Yada who will make this known so that it will be understood. So that you will be understood is probably the best way to render it. Yada will make this known so that you will be understood. He will actually and continually bring about the way to receive the benefits of the relationship, F. Asher, in the distant future during the last days on behalf of the indignant remnant. Surely, as the final witness to the eternal testimony regarding the restoring appointments.
It's amazing.
That's pretty explicit, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So while celebrating Teruah in 2022, just 11 years prior to the fulfillment of the final Moed, Kippurim and Sukkah in year 6000, yeah, I found myself so caught up in this positioning of the characters and the explanations of their purpose that I just kept on translating, and I did not interrupt the flow to provide commentary. You guys have been with me for a long time now, and you don't very mm-hmm. often see pages of translations, amplified translations,
no.
without being interrupted by saying, this means the following. This word was based on this. This is the connection that you can make to something else so that you understand what God is saying. I just went with it. I couldn't leave it. The fact is, the preceding five statements are related. They are inseparable. Leading off with Bena, insights and understanding derived by making perceptive connections, they reveal the process that we must deploy if we wish to transition from knowing what the prophet revealed to actually understanding it. With this as the object of our quest, we are introduced to a Gabor, a man who was Ahmad La Neged, present at this time and place, relative to discerning the meaning of Daniel's revelation. As a Gabor, this gentleman is, and it's a masculine noun, so it's gentleman, if you want to call an aggressive, contentious individual, combative individual, a gentleman, Yahweh's view of it anyway. He's being depicted as courageous and capable. While human, he has been strengthened by God to prevail. He is aggressive, and as I say, he is combative, which are characteristics which clearly appeal to Yahweh and are necessary at this time. We have religious Jews who are absolutely lost in space, and we have progressive Jews that couldn't think their way out of a wet paper bag.
Yep.
Somebody needs to be combative. Now, the Gabor is a coal. He is a vocal Adam man to whom it would be beneficial to Shama listen. His stated purpose is to begin, provide understanding. He will do so by making appropriate connections and by being discriminating and discerning, favoring judgment over unfounded opinions. Based upon this particular location, we know that Ule, the adventure he has undertaken, has been enriching. The choices he has advocated are empowering and enriching. The Gabor is shown doing something that I don't think anyone considered prior to Yada Yawa in these series of books, these translations. Hikara. He is the lone voice calling out to, inviting, summoning, and welcoming someone exceptional. Gabriel, the man God has enabled and empowered. A compound of Geber and El, Gabriel is also a man, albeit an extraordinary one. He is Dode, the returning Messiah and King. He will, as the prophecy explains, arrive at this moment in time to protect his people from a world at war. He is Yahweh's most formidable fighter, combative, capable, and aggressive, authorized and resolute. Now, if you're wondering why, if this is Dode, why not just use his name?
Yeah.
That question has been asked and answered. No one was supposed to know until now. Next, we read that the voice calling out and announcing Dode's return recognizes that the most qualified prophet to explain who is going to do what to whom, why and when, is the one who has been assigned the responsibility of informing and saving Yisrael. So he asks Dode to bien la halaz et la meret, to provide the insights and the connections needed to understand this revelation. After all, the answers are found throughout Dode's Mizmor Psalms, many of which pertain to his return during the last days. In the Mizmor, we discover that upon his return, Dode will be as God, as brilliant as the sun. So as the brilliant king of Yisrael approached, Daniel did a face plant. In his own words, Ba'ath. He was overwhelmed. You know, if you don't know what's coming, I'm sure it would be overwhelming. I mean, you're there in the midst of Babylon, and all of a sudden the King of Kings comes back as if he were God, brilliant as the sun. Yeah, okay, that would do it. Yeah. But if you know what's going to happen, if you come to know the man, if you come to know the God that made it possible, when it happens, you're not going to be frightened, but instead you're going to be celebrating.
Welcoming. Yes.
Heck, you got a guy here that is inviting him to come that way and announcing his return. Now, Dode didn't miss a beat. Daniel was not his intended audience anyway.
Just
so speaking to us, the Messiah said, children of Adam, you should choose to use your ability to make the necessary connections to understand, learning how to clearly examine, closely consider the evidence while being discerning. Then it reminds us that this prophetic revelation is for the end of time, our time, not Daniel's time. So he fell asleep in the middle of Dode's declaration. It was not for him to know, but for us. Dode would prop Daniel up so that he would remain at his post, positioned as he was to reveal our future and Yahweh's return for his people. And he said, pay close attention to me and behold who I am. Yada will make this known so that you will be understood. He will actually and continually bring about the way to receive the benefits of the relationship in the distant future during the last days on behalf of the indignant remnant. Surely, as the final witness to the eternal testimony regarding the restoring appointments. Well, folks, I'm here to tell you that when you understand what the words mean and recognize that Michael is the final witness, then you're not looking at some archangel out there, but instead an individual whose translations and explanations of God's words you can read. You can study. Go to yadayah.com. You'll find it all. 25 volumes, averaging about 650 pages a volume, filled with translations of Yahweh's testimony and analysis of it. Hundreds, maybe thousands of insights that have heretofore never been considered, all shared so that Yahweh's people, Yehudim, Israelites, come home before it is too late. Recognize that their Messiah and King, returning Messiah and King, the Son of God, is none other than Dod David, the Beloved. But beyond this,
it makes so much more sense.
It's another nail in the coffin of that farcical book named Enoch. It is another nail in the coffin of the fanciful testimony in the Christian New Testament. It is another nail in the coffin of the worst book ever written, the Quran, which Muhammad claimed was given to him by Gabriel. That's a lot. And it's hard to imagine how profound these implications are. Now, while I have not gone back and retranslated the ninth chapter of Daniel, that is where Gabriel's name is mentioned prominently. What it means is that the individual telling us about the flow of time and the fulfillment of the Moed Mikre is Dod.
A few years ago, you had said that the New Testament butchered Dod's reputation, and I agreed at the time, but this really just hammers home how badly religion has warped Dod's persona.
Yes. Yeah, it's true that religion has led us astray. They've had, Daniel visited by angels, as opposed to reporting who God has authorized to convey his message, to call his people home, and another to rescue them in the last days. Rather than the meaningless names of angels that can't help anyone, the emphasis is, these are the people that I have brought to the fore to unravel this for you and help you understand who I am. You know, if you look at all of the rabbis, not a single one of them ever figured this out. Not one.
Shocking.
There's not even one of them that will even mention Yahweh's name. They don't know Dod's correct name. They don't even like him. They don't know that he is the returning Messiah. They don't know that he is the returning King of Kings, even though it is obvious throughout his testimony. And so here we are. God's saying this is the final witness. This is all going to happen before the last of the Moed are fulfilled. And here you are listening to it.
Can I just say one quick thing?
Sure.
Several years ago, you and I wrote it down. I have it on my desk, and I'm just looking at it now. Dode, he's the King of Kings. He's the Son of God. He's Yah's beloved. He's the Shepherd of Israel. He's the Mashiach. I think he anointed him three times. He's the branch. He's the firstborn. He's the prophet.
Yep.
He's God's associate. He's a Gabora warrior, and who is right and upright.
Yep.
So who else can he be?
You know,
Yada,
one of the things, too, that you just mentioned, that all of the prophecies that are attributed to the Christian Jesus, all of them,
mm-hmm.
all of
Correct.
Them, actually not only speak about Dode, but they name Dode. And
yeah.
one of the most profound is the one that is in Yeshaya 9, where it talks about
mm-hmm.
A son. A child is born, a son
is born, a child is born, a child is
yeah.
given. Yeah,
yeah. It speaks of a Gabor. And it names him. So,
by sound Jesus.
And it but by saying that he is a Gabor, guess what Gabor is based on?
He's
Yeah, it's the same word that we're reading here. Strong and valiant warrior, someone who is
mm-hmm.
exceedingly contentious and combative and assertive, a fighter to defend God's people. He's a Gabor. Yeah, the returning son that God gave us is Dode. Our whole quest began now, 21 years ago on Teruah in 2001, right after 9/11, when Yahweh introduced himself to me. And at that time, the very first thing that drew me into this was 2 Samuel, the
mm-hmm.
7th chapter, where at the time, I was reading this in English Bibles. I was an agnostic at the time that God approached me, and which is, God can work with that. If he can't work with you, if you're religious or if you're political, but if you're an agnostic, he can work with you. I'm trying to understand it because this every English Bible says when he sins that God will not spare the punishment of the rod. Well, I had thought that he, because, you know, I had been a Twistian in my youth. I had been probably the youngest ordained ruling elder in the history of the Presbyterian Church. I was an evangelist. I mean, I was all kinds of wrong. And so I still had this legacy that this must be talking about Jesus, you know, that he was the person that was going to be the descendant of Dode that 2 Samuel 7 was speaking about. Of course, if you just read it, it says it's speaking about Dode. And the conclusion is, I'm in speaking about Dode. The beginning is, I'm speaking about Dode. I'm speaking to Dode, about our relationship. He is my son, I am his father. All this is going to happen with Dode. Nothing that I have promised Dode will fail to materialize. And so the returning king is Dode. It was that passage, though, that drew us in to translation, to begin this whole thing. And, of course, the key word was Asher.
Yeah.
And Asher means to make an association with. And we learn that Asher is both a verb and an adjective and a preposition, and that collectively it is as I translated it in this last statement, which is that this final witness is going to provide the way to the benefits of the relationship, Asher. So not only is Yada known, but the very word that began this, the first word I translated 21 years ago, is right in the middle of it, Asher. Asher is the path, which is narrow and restrictive, that leads to the method of getting the greatest joy out of life, which is to be part of the covenant, which is to attend the Moed Mikre. And it's just hard to imagine that all of this was here waiting for us. And it has been an exceedingly rewarding and enriching adventure for myself and for all of the covenant members like Kirk and Dee who have come along with us. Now, Dee, I think that you had the opportunity to spend a few hours, maybe even a day or two with the fourth chapter where it defines who Mikael is. What were your thoughts? Because that is certainly groundbreaking.
Well, it was pretty radical, and I went into it with not skeptical, because I've learned that I'm usually wrong when I'm skeptical, but I went into it questioning, okay, let's see where he's getting this, because, Michael the Archangel has been around for all of my life, this theory, and it was so profoundly not an angel, Sar. I mean, you might as well say, like, the chief guy that knows what's going on, representative of a household, of a family, of a tribe, that very specifically an individual in charge. And it's a man. It's always a man. I mean, I've looked at every example of Sar throughout. I mean, it's applied to Ya'udim. It's applied to Yisrael. It's also applied to the Goy. It's irrespective of persons. It's just a guy in charge. And this guy, Mikael, he knows what's going on as a representative of Dod. He asks the questions, and he has the answers. And it was so obvious that I kind of beta tested it on my family, and I called up some of my Christian family, and I asked them, hey, what do you think of these words? And they agreed. It's a man. It's not an angel, and they're Christians. It was that obvious.
Yes. They're clearly a man. So is Gabriel. Gabriel and Michael are both men. One pretty ordinary, other than the mission that he's been assigned, and the other really extraordinary. And by extraordinary, Dod is the ultimate. I mean, he is earns every attribute that God can bequeath a person. God dearly loves him and respects him. And since God never works alone, he always chooses someone to carry out the mission at hand. Dod is the person that he chose to help govern and lead, shepherd all of us through eternity. Dod remains in charge forever. It's one thing to, in this minor role, to represent the king, but that role, man, I tell you, to be qualified from God's point of view to lead his people forevermore, that is indeed extraordinary and exceptional. And that's who he's talking about here. And yet, Dod was not perfect. Dod is the perfect example of what the Torah does. An imperfect individual was made to appear perfect in God's presence because he was right about God.
Yeah.
And so in Dod, we see the healing power, the restorative power of the Torah. And as we move towards Kippurim, we find Dod again. Now, we're going to stop broadcasting, and we'll just be recording for the archives here in just a moment. But the reason that this is so extraordinary as we approach Kippurim is that on Kippurim, Dod becomes the high priest, and he is the one that is anointing the mercy seat, the Kippureth, of the Ark of the Covenant, so that the Torah's explanation of what needs to be done on Kippurim to reconcile Yisrael and Yahudim, Jews, with Yahweh is accomplished, and it is being accomplished by Dod himself. Something that God
That's the blood
makes,
on the hands, right?
Yeah, which is, you know, God said, okay, you're not going to build my house because you have blood on your hands. Right, he has blood on his hands. He is the one anointing the Kapporeth, the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And when you understand Dod's role, not only in this, but coming back as the King of Kings with God's Son and his shepherd leading the flock forevermore. It is such a beautiful picture. And you might also say, okay, so why in the world would God stoop to using a lowly goy to bring this message to you? God never works alone. I mean, he picked an old broken down shepherd on the lamb who was wanted for murder to lead his people out of Mitzrayim and Moshe. He never works alone. Always chooses,
you know,
even when he saved
that.
His people during the flood, he chose Noah and his family. That is God's preference. That is why he created the universe and authored life, was because he wanted to enjoy working through his family. And so the reason he's bringing this message to you through a goy is because he doesn't work alone, and there were no Jews willing to listen to him.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
I haven't thought about that, Craig, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You know, the birthright of Jacob and Esau, Esau rejected it. So this man of Esau that is returning to bring Jews back to the name, I mean, it's almost this backhand of correction. You know, you didn't take your birthright and live up to it. And of all people, it's, you know, for Esau, it's just, as a Jew, it's sobering to think that. It's not just a random goy. This is all about this family, this one family.
Yes. And Jacob really represents Yisrael. And he had his issues. And in fact, he was far more wrong than he was right. Just like Yisrael. And so he represents what would happen over the next nearly 3,000, almost 4,000 years. So it is Yahweh's contention that his people have been very difficult, that they have chosen to be religious as opposed to engaging in the relationship with him, that they have ignored and demeaned his name, and that they, rather than fulfilling their mission, which was to be his witnesses, that they have led countless people away from him, and that the greatest enemy of Jews today is Rabbinic Judaism. So God is trying to awaken his people, telling them to walk out of Babylon, this confusing commingling of religion and politics together that is so prevalent, and is going to be even more prevalent should Benjamin Netanyahu with his coalition of ultra-Orthodox Haredim and the political right wing win election, and God, he might even be better than the current prime minister who's advocating the two-state final solution. What
can you bring?
What a mess! You know, and it's, and things are going to get far worse in this as we move through the time of troubles, and that Yahweh is quickly approaching, along with Dod. You need to listen. If you are a Yisraelite, a Yehud, I think I would begin with an introduction to God. Read those three volumes. Go to yadayah.com. It's all free for you there. If you want the paperback, you can buy it without royalty, just for the printing cost. If you want the hardback, they're available to you for just the cost of printing and delivery from Amazon. There's a link directly to them. There's a link to all of these radio programs. Throughout the years, there's a comprehensive presentation of every book in its entirety at the yadayah.com site. for you, available free. You don't need to provide anything. We do not take donations. We are simply covenant, doing our best to share Yahweh's message as accurately as possible so that his people are responsive and return home. Well, we look forward to being with you as we will celebrate Kippurim next week, as well as Sukkah the week thereafter. It's a wonderful time of year, a time of reconciliations and of camping out with God and the approach of Yahweh's return on this day, Kippurim, in year 6000 Yah, just 11 years from now. May Yah bless. Thank you, Kirk and Dee, for being with us this evening, and we look forward to resuming where we left off next week with another program here in the Yada Yah radio series. Good night.
Good night, y'all.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Bye.